your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Today, I'm joined with Graham Farrar, president of the Glasshouse Group. And Glasshouse is one of the largest vertically integrated cannabis companies in California. Graham, it's awesome to have you on the show. And, you know, you have quite the impressive background. And, you know, just from looking at that very visible connection during your career in bringing technology and agriculture together. So it's really great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Jeff. Honored, flattered to be here. Looking at the list of your prior guests, I feel like I'll try and do my best to keep up, but great company to be in, and thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, Graham, I think, you know, just kind of looking back at your early career, you were on the founding team at Sonos, and I thought a nice way to kick off the show would be talk a little bit about kind of the pre-cannabis days and how you pivoted into the cannabis world from the tech world.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think if there's a unifying theme that connects my world or my business history, it's that I've got a lot of experience doing things that people have no experience doing. And I'm a tech geek by heart. I've loved cannabis for decades, and it's been a part of my life for a long time. But my business work has been mostly on the tech side, first with a company called Wavefront, which made 3D animation software, and then with a company called Software.com, which was early in the .com days, made email software. And then with Sonos, where we made, you know, one of the coolest home audio Wi-Fi products out there. And, you know, the thing is, with each one of those things, it was the first of its kind. And that's kind of where I've got my comfortability level. And cannabis is actually makes a lot of sense. People don't think of it that way, but well-done agriculture involves a lot of technology, a lot of consistency, repeatability. And at the end of the day, you know, a plant is really not so different from a computer program in the sense that if you give it, you have desired outcomes. And if you can figure out the consistent inputs to give it, it'll give you what you want. And so if you think about it as a biological system, the overlay and, you know, connection with tech is actually pretty obvious and definitely a benefit in our day-to-day operations.
Absolutely. And just kind of looking about, you know, your current world at Glasshouse, you know, one huge fan of what you guys do. And I would love for you to talk a little bit more about the mission and the company.
Yeah, sure. So really, you know, we formed Glasshouse kind of on the front end of what we saw as an inevitable, thankfully, you know, evolutionary progress of cannabis. As I mentioned, I've been doing cannabis related things for probably technically longer than I should have. Big believer in the plant, love what it can offer for society. I think the world is a better place with cannabis in it. You know, I think the societal changes that we're going through, where we're reducing a focus on a drug war against a plant that can help us, you know, not tearing apart families, not spending money in enforcement, not living in a world where, you know, I think regulation is infinitely better than prohibition. And prohibition, you pretend that something that does exist doesn't, and you don't educate anyone about it. In a regulatory world, you acknowledge it exists. You acknowledge that there's a right for people to use it, acknowledge what risks there are, have, you know, education around that for kids and things like that, have testing for product safety. So as we move into that, we really built Glasshouse to ride on that, to be part of that platform. So we started in the Prop 215 days about half a decade ago, which, you know, is not tremendously long, but in cannabis feels like about 50 years. So I sometimes,
sure.
We're one of the oldest kids in the candy store at Glasshouse. But really what it's formed for is we believe in greenhouse growing and the hybrid of using technology along with Mother Nature to produce high quality consistently and produce it efficiently so that it can be accessible to as many people as possible. The country of California is a big one. And so we've taken a scale-based approach and really want to bring, you know, we want people to feel better with plants. That's the goal with Glasshouse. And we do that through cannabis.
Awesome. Now, I was reading up on this, but you guys actually converted a Dutch greenhouse into the launch of Glasshouse Farms.
Yep.
What's the story behind that?
Yeah, so Glasshouse is here in Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara, I'm lucky enough to call home. I've lived here just about my whole life. It's also unique and something that not a lot of people know about Santa Barbara's back, you know, 65 years ago, Dutch and Japanese growers, who are some of the best in the world in an agricultural sense, scoured the country. They left Holland and Japan and basically scoured the United States and landed in Santa Barbara because it's got a great climate. It's fairly flat land. It's got good year-round sun. There's a bunch of water under the ground. And a handful of them built greenhouses at the time, predominantly for cut flowers. And those greenhouses are really a perfect fit for cannabis cultivation. And, you know, our view is we really like the approach of using what Mother Nature gives us and then controlling it just enough to make it perfect for the plant. So in our greenhouses, we can do continual harvest with automated blackout. We've got high-tech Priva climate computers. We've got on-site wells. We've got a custom program for fertigation machines, CO2 injection. And then we have that in a climate that's really almost just perfect. So we protect our plants. We use what the Dutch guys were smart enough to set up in the buildings they built, and then we went through and converted them for to make them optimal for cannabis.
Interesting story, and really cool. You like reusing something that was for something else.
Yeah,
love it.
Yeah,
Graham. There's obviously been a lot of talk, especially you know in the California market, as kind of being a first mover. I wanted to talk a little bit about the transition from Prop 215 to 64. Mm-hmm. So you know, what did the cannabis space look like in California when you joined compared to what it is today?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So as I mentioned, we joined, you know, we became part of the market and at least in the form of Glasshouse Farms in the Prop 215 days, right? So if you look, we have two greenhouses now, a total of about 500,000 square feet. One's 150,000 square feet, which is the first one we started. The second one's 350,000 square feet. And if you look at them, you see a lot of difference. And a good portion of that was driven by the change from Prop 215 back when we had patient recs and each rec allowed you to grow six plants per patient to the Prop 64 model where it's canopy-based and unlimited plants. So if you go to our first greenhouse, just as an example, you'll see a lot of really big pots. And that's because we would grow fewer number of plants larger so that we could fill the greenhouses and still remain compliant with the plant counts. Now you go to our new greenhouse under Prop 64, where it's square footage based and not plant based, and you'll see, you know, five times the number of plants in a given amount of square footage because we're not, you know, going through that Prop 215 model. So it's interesting just to see how far that has permeated. Obviously, the regulations now with Prop 64 are, you know, orders of magnitude, maybe several orders of magnitude more than with Prop 215. I think there's upsides and downsides to that. The taxation is much higher than it should be to encourage people to leave the illicit market and provide access. That's something we're working on. But the testing, on the other hand, is radically better. And we can know that anything that's sold in a licensed dispensary has been through testing that, you know, frankly, didn't exist, but should have in Prop 215. Frankly, it should exist probably for our food supply. If we tested food the way that we test cannabis, less people would die. And that's something that hopefully helps us move in that direction with what we're doing in cannabis as well.
Talking about change, you guys over at Glasshouse, I mean, you guys opened the first recreational adult use dispensary in Santa Barbara about a year ago. And, you know, I just wanted to know, from your standpoint, one, talk to us about leading the change in an area that there wasn't anything. And two, what was the reaction, at least from the county, you know, of opening the store?
Yeah, it is really interesting to be on both, you know, so we're vertically integrated within California. I think one of the few companies that has every single license type you can have, with the exception of a compliance testing lab, which we're not allowed to have. So it is interesting to look at the market, not as the market, but in the various verticals within the market. So, you know, being on the cultivation side, where we're in the county of Santa Barbara and going through, you know, the various challenges and opportunities there, and then also being on the retail side, technically in the city of Santa Barbara, it's interesting to compare and contrast them. So we did, as you mentioned, we did open the first ever adult use dispensary in Santa Barbara. Definitely feels good to have that, you know, kind of up forever on the wall in my hometown. You know, the community has been amazing. It loves it. I mean, Santa Barbara is such a perfect community for cannabis, and it's fairly open-minded, progressive, people who are conscious of their health. You know, there's just a lot of fit from it. So the Pharmacy Santa Barbara has done tremendously. It was the first one to open, and we have seen nothing but positivity from the community. They're so happy that we're here. We're so happy to be here for them to serve and provide, you know, access to cannabis in a safe way. It's been great for the community, creating jobs, you know, it's tax generation, especially now in the middle of a pandemic. It's a bright spot against a fairly bleak, other, you know, economic backdrop. So, and it really has, I mean, the love, I'll give an example. When we first opened, I went to a restaurant and I had the lady behind the counter bought me lunch to thank us for opening the pharmacy, because she was now able to get her medicine here without having to drive an hour like she used to before we opened to get it. So that's how positive the vibe has been towards the pharmacy in Santa Barbara. It feels really good.
That's awesome. It's great to have that support from the community right in your backyard.
Yeah. And it's awesome to watch people, you know, the evolution. We see something like 12% each week of our consumers are first time in our shop. So, you know, a lot of new people. With the pandemic, we've seen a change in the who comes in the door. You know, there's maybe not just all fun on a Friday night, you know, good times, but sleep through a Tuesday. We call it Tincture Tuesdays. And, you know, it's really opened people's eyes to cannabis as medicine. You know, if your kids came home from school and never left, if you've got less hours at work, if you're watching the news and the anxiety, you know, the death tickers and things like that, cannabis can be, it's a tremendous help in ways that people don't always necessarily understand. I sometimes say, if you think you don't like cannabis, you just don't know how you like it yet, because the world of it just being two buds in a Ziploc, smoke a joint, is gone, right? I mean, it can be bath bombs and tinctures and sleep and CBN and all kinds of stuff, alcohol alternatives. There's just so many ways to enjoy it now, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think with the pandemic and, you know, the markets and, you know, there's obviously a lot of stress on people's minds in the last quarter. And I feel like, you know, with so many states deeming cannabis as essential, it's really kind of opened the doors to a lot of people who might not have ever thought about it. And they're like, actually, you know what? This could be something interesting to try. So yeah, definitely a good time for companies like you guys. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your products. So you guys have quite a few. You've got Glasshouse Farms, you've got Field Extracts, Forbidden Flowers, you've got a ton of storefronts, Pharmacy Santa Barbara, Pharmacy Berkeley, The Pottery, Bud and Bloom. And so I wanted, you know, to hear from you, obviously being the president of the company, talking to us about, you know, your growth and future trajectory, you know, as we kind of look into 2021.
Yeah, sure. So a lot there, right? I mean, I think fundamentally we look at the world through the lens of being a cannabinoid product company, right? And so THC is the obvious one. CBD has recently come on the radar in a big way. We've got a 250-acre hemp grow that's planted and a couple months away from harvesting on that side of things. But if you step back and you look at that world, like, how do you help people feel better with plants? Again, whether that's fun on a Friday night or a tincture on Tuesday, it's really fundamentally the same thing, which is feeling better with plants, specifically feeling better with cannabinoids. We have an endocannabinoid system in our body, just like a nervous system. Its role is really homeostasis and balance. Cannabis is a plant that very uniquely produces these cannabinoids. You know, there's a lot of keys in cannabis that fit the locks in our body. We have varying degrees of understanding of that. I'm excited to see that improve as we step back, you know, as a society from this Schedule One no-known medical benefit perspective and move into a perspective of how can this plant help us. And so if you look at it through that view, what we're really looking to do is find products that help do that for people, help them feel better using the cannabis plant. So we've got Glasshouse Farms, which is kind of our, you know, foundational staple, very high quality flower at a great value. Our goals there are quality and consistency, produced efficiently. And then, you know, when I think about efficiency, I don't think of it as how do we, you know, cut the cost. What I think of it is how do we deliver the most value to the most number of consumers, right? How do we bring something that used to cost $80 and deliver it to them for 30, right? And so that's what efficiency means to us, is getting this out to as many people as possible at the highest possible quality. Forbidden Flowers, similar, it's a line that we developed with the actress Bella Thorne. The reason I think she's interesting is, A, she's a really authentic cannabis consumer. She's got a dab bar in her house and probably rolls a joint better than I do. But she talks to an interesting demographic, right? Which is this kind of young female demographic, historically kind of left out by cannabis, right? And I think there's a bunch of people there, call them the canna curious, who are trying to figure out how this newly available plant integrates into their life. Like, you know, do I use it like a glass of Chardonnay? Do I use it before yoga? Do I use it for sleep? Do I use it before a party? And she's really good at talking to that group. And I think that has a lot of value and is unique. You know, Snoop Dogg talks to people, but he's not talking to people who don't know about cannabis. He's talking about talking to the converted already. Whereas Bella, I think, is educating people. Our stores, I think, are great introduction pathways for people. The pharmacy ones in particular were made to be really accessible to anybody. They're made for the fact that 3% of the population had medical cards in California, which means 97% of the population has never been in a dispensary. So it's made for those people to come in and find someone that they can talk to, whether they're a, you know, weed nerd or a first timer. There's somebody in there to help them with what they want. So I think our view is, you know, California is the most exciting cannabis market on the planet, I think, right? It is the largest and it's the most discerning. It's a cultural epicenter for cannabis. It's 27% of the U.S. national market for cannabis, right? So if it was states, it would be 13 states. People sometimes say, hey, are you going to be an MSO? And I say, we already are. They're just all in the country of California, right? It's the state of Los Angeles, the state of Sacramento, the state of San Diego, right? But at the same time, it's also one of the most immature because of the regulatory rollout. I mean, we've got 2/3 of the market's probably still illicit. So if you have big and you have unconverted, to me, that's an opportunity for us to bring our products to a lot more people. And retail helps us make our whole ecosystem smarter, helps us bring in and educate consumers. So you put all that together. We've got a 22,000 square foot manufacturing lab as well, where we can, you know, produce everything from, I call it seed to ashtray, right? I mean, that's the real goal. We grow it, we turn the product that people want, and we sell it to those people with a maximum education in our retail stores. So that's really where we're going. And, you know, at the end of the day, feel better with plants is what we're aiming for.
Absolutely. And I feel like too, you know, when you're growing your own, you know, seed and your own plant, and it's kind of the whole process from start to finish, it's almost like, you know, you're more connected to it with your consumers, right? Instead of just, let's say, you know, getting it from somewhere else.
Yep. So the other thing we can do is we can hear the feedback directly from consumers in our stores. Hey, I wish that there was this, or why don't you, I'm looking for THCV products, right? Things that not many people know about in the minor cannabinoid space, or and we can then, it's kind of like Apple with the iPhone. So, you know, for the iPhone fans out there, one of the reasons that I think Apple is so good is because they have complete vertical integration, right? They make the chip, they make the software, they make the design. And so they can make it work really well together. If you look mm-hmm. at some of the other options, you know, Android with from Google, but the phone is from Samsung, and they're always kind of trying to figure out how to talk to each other. With us, we can say, oh, you know, the consumer's telling us they want this. Well, let's grow the right thing in the greenhouse. Let's manufacture it in our manufacturing lab, and let's bring it to them at our stores, see if we got it right. And if we did, then we'll roll it out to the other, you know, 800 stores that exist today, which should be 5,000 dispensaries, but we'll get there eventually. So, you know, it's a really nice ecosystem.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, so one thing that I did want to bring up, and this is something that I thought was pretty interesting for the brand, but you guys are really described as, you know, one of the more eco-friendly and sustainable brands in the space. And so I was just curious, from a marketing standpoint, like, have you guys implemented that into your messaging and your strategy as well?
Probably not as much as we should. I think, you know, one of the things that sometimes we fall victim to is I'm a planet lover by default. You know, I've been on I was on the board for a decade to heal the ocean as an ocean group here in Santa Barbara. I was on the board of Seacology, which is an international conservationist group. So we kind of just come at it, and we're farmers. So we just kind of come at it with this respect from the land, and maybe don't do enough to tell people, because I think people, you know, the consumer cares more and more. So we've just always had the approach of we're farming the land. And so taking care of it's kind of just, it's almost, you know, I don't know what other option there is, or certainly not one that you'd feel good about. I like to call it the triple bottom line, which is there's a lot of things that we can do. For example, capturing and recycling overdrain and then reusing it, right? So that's good for the planet because we're not wasting water. It's good for the planet because we're not putting nitrogen in the groundwater table. It's good for the business because water and nutrients are money and they're expensive. And so if we don't waste them, that allows us to be more efficient in what we deliver. And then it's also good, you know, from the consumer's understanding of who we are, if we can communicate that to them, because it gives them a reason to say, hey, this, I want to support this, right? Or we capture CO2 from our heating systems in the greenhouse and inject that CO2 back into the greenhouse for the plants to use. So you take something that would, in this case, literally be a greenhouse gas, and you grab it. It's a waste product, doesn't cost you anything extra to generate it. You give it to the plants. The plants breathe it in like we do oxygen. They grow better, and then they turn it into release oxygen. You know, so they're basically a big catalytic converter to clean up what would be this greenhouse gas, but in a way that's actually beneficial. Again, the plant grows stronger. We get better percentage and more growth. It's better for the planet because we're using all these resources. It's better for our business, and it's better for the consumer who understands how those things link up. And so I think we probably should talk about it more. It's just kind of so much who we are that I think sometimes we forget to.
Totally. Well, Graham, I think for one, you know, the last 20 minutes have been amazing because I've learned so many things from you already, but I do think you guys are doing some incredible work, and you guys have really built an incredible brand, and the reputation has certainly followed suit. So congrats there. And, you know, if you've listened to our show before, we spend most of the time really talking about business, but then we kind of end the show and do some quick fire questions on you.
Sure.
So I have a couple for you. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. First question. What did you go to school for?
I have an interesting path through school. So I went to school here in Santa Barbara. I actually, if you want to tell the story the nice way, I skipped out of my senior year and went to college as a freshman instead. If you want,
wow.
If you want the more realistic story, I had a 0.7 GPA, so there was no way I'm graduating anyway. I decided to take the GED and went to Santa Barbara City College, which is an amazing a school right on the ocean here in Santa Barbara, and then transferred to CU Boulder in Colorado. And my major out there, I was destined for medical school is where I was heading. I was a molecular biology and biochemistry major. So I'm kind of a semi-scientist by background, but always really loved the technology side of things, which is how I ended up with the Sonos, et cetera, connections in the meantime. But I'm a geek, basically.
So cool. So who's your favorite artist or band from a musical perspective?
Oh, that's a tough one. I got a lot of things I like. I've been a big Anderson .Paak fan, lately. I mean, I'm eclectic, Anderson .Paak, Rage Against the Machine, Bon Iver, Bob Marley, Coffee. I've been listening to a lot lately. I mean, I've got, the Kendrick Lamar stuff. I mean, it's everywhere. If you throw it at me, there's a good chance I appreciate it. I'm a huge music lover, Sonos. I'm on the board of the Santa Barbara Bowl, which is the largest music venue of Santa Barbara. So I really have a pretty deep appreciation for anybody who makes good music and has that connection back to I call it the universal oneness. And it really doesn't matter what the style is. There's lots of different ways to get there.
Agree. So, if you essentially had magical powers today.
You're saying I don't.
Maybe you do. If you had, you know, real magical powers, like what would you do? Like, would it be a spell? Would it be a potion? Would you fly? What have you always thought about as a kid if you actually were able to do that?
So this is a weird one. So the thing I always think about is how much we could do and how good things could be if you just were able to line up what was happening, right? So a random example, right? You need to get some package from somewhere to where you are. If you could just, there's, you know, the odds that someone is not traveling between those two places is infinitesimal, but the odds of finding them is even smaller. So if you could just get the world to, like, all the gears to connect, it would be amazing and you wouldn't actually have to change anything. So my goal, or, you know, the spell I would cast, I think, is to make things, you know, this guy's got too much food. This guy doesn't have enough. This guy's throwing away the food because he can't find a mouth for it. And the guy over here is starving, right? If you could just figure out how to get those connections to happen, you could unlock an immense amount of positive, you know, benefit. And it wouldn't actually take anything more. It would just stop the waste. So that would be my quick hope is to get everything aligned and connecting the right way.
I like that a lot. Yeah. And I think that, in turn, will just create a lot of balance in the world also, you know?
Communication and coordination. I say that probably 10 times a day internally to the team, but I would wish it for the world as well, because at the end of the day, it's really only the lack of those two things that creates most of the strife and conflict and anguish that we have. It's, you know, if you could get the right people communicating to coordinate things, the world is already an amazingly awesome place, but it would take it to the next level.
I hear you. Okay. So last question. What is your favorite food?
Sushi.
Me too. We're aligned.
Yes. One of the things I miss the most with all the stay at home lockdown stuff is sushi is my favorite food. It's also one of those things that is challenging to do at a high level on your own. Right. I mean, like, if you like a hamburger, you can barbecue a hamburger in your backyard, not too hard. You can get pretty darn close there, but to whip up a full on sushi meal with all the fish and is, you know, fresh and cooked right and rolled right and all that stuff is hard. And so I went months without sushi and have been on a tear to try and get back up, which means I have to go like 3 times a week to average out all the weeks I missed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I fish quite a bit and, have a boat. So now that it's warm on the East Coast on the weekends, I've just been like going out fishing, eating a lot of fish. But I was with you. I feel like in the spring, I really wanted sushi and, you know, just couldn't get any good sushi then.
Fine. Hard to do on your own.
It really is. So, well, Graham, listen, it's been amazing to have you on the show. Congrats on everything you guys are accomplishing at Glasshouse, and appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks again for having us. I think you guys are doing awesome work and getting this out there. I mean, cannabis at the end of the day is so amazing. And so, as Martin Luther King Jr. says, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I'm happy that we get the opportunity to be here to help encourage that bend and bring cannabis to more people. And thanks for everything you guys are doing for getting the knowledge out there and increasing people's awareness of how it can help.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the goal here. It's all about education and, you know, getting that out there to the world and, you know, exposing all the amazing things that it does. So really, really appreciate everything you guys are doing as well.
Likewise. Thanks for having us.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.